Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, I said like you, like it or not. That's when it got wheels off. From what I can gather, keeping a rock band together over a long stretch of time with the same members is really difficult thing to do. Ryan Miller has done just that. He has kept his band Guster together since 1991, 2 years longer than my own band, even though he's a couple of years younger than me. He is an R. Miller, as am I. We both grew up in Texas. We have a lot of things in common, which is something we will cover during the upcoming interview. But what's great about talking to Ryan is that his mind moves a million miles a minute, and his ideas come in avalanches of creativity. This guy is so fun and so funny and so weird that to be around him is to be inspired. And I'm so glad I got to talk to him for Wheels Off, because during the course of our conversation, I learned things about him that even after years of friendship, I had never known. And I got insights into a creative process that I think is one which is worthy of emulation. What he does, the way he does it, how hard he works, how open-minded he is when it comes to ideas and creativity and just keeping moving and keeping making. I think it's so inspiring, and I'm really glad that I get to share the crazy brain of Ryan Miller with you in this episode of Wheels Off. Welcome to Wheels Off, Ryan Miller.
Wheels Off. Wheels Off, Rhett and Ryan, starting off with a bang.
I was ready for you to say something so awesome.
That was all I did, was just repeat what you said. It was pretty awesome.
It was pretty great. So, yeah, I was trying to explain to you ahead of time, but I figured you would get it as we went.
This is a thing I do too. We're in good hands.
What creative project are you working on at the moment, and how is it inspiring you?
Oh, really? Right out the gates? That's what we're doing?
That's the idea.
That's the idea of a thing?
It's the...
Wait, I have a... It is funny. This is actually good timing. What creative projects am I working on? That's great. That's like five or six things, so that'll be... how many hours do we have? How much time do we have? Are these half hour?
Maybe pick the top one or two.
Really?
Yeah, they run about 25 to 40 minutes.
Okay. Only pick one or two? Okay.
You can do whatever you want.
How about this? I could tell you the ones I'm working on, and then we can kind of drill in however you like.
Sure.
Okay. How about this? The one I'm most excited about, but this is the most oddball one, so it's kind of a weird one to do. I mean, you've already introed, so people have some context.
Oh, they'll know who you are.
Okay, but how about this? Because I don't even know if you and I can tell you the things that are sort of driving me in general, and we can drill into some of the more...
What if we hit the 30-minute mark, and you're just still laying the ground rules out for the first question?
True. That's how we know we're in good shape. Then we should just turn it into a podcast series of you and I talking, which is also a good idea. Okay, well...
It would be called We Are Miller.
R.R. Miller. We're both R. Millers. Remember, that was it. A-R-E Millers.
We Are Millers.
R. Millers.
Just the letter R.
R. That's like when the Bends were the Bends, but we should totally go on tour with them. All right. The main thing that feeds my sort of creative soul in general is the Guster umbrella, which is, we had a record come out in January. I just came from late because I was with a meeting with the manager talking about all the cool, like, we're doing acoustic stuff. We just did a When is Symphony this coming stuff. Out?
This won't be out for a couple of months.
Okay, so we're doing like this overexcited remix where we had people from seven different languages record our
song.
That
song's insane.
Yeah, the song's insane.
I went insane listening to that song. Is that you doing the vocal?
Yeah, it's me doing that. Wow. That's a whole other conversation. So the band stuff is big and we're touring and that's a whole thing. And it's pretty much like my main line where things get cleared out of the way by that. That's the 900-pound elephant in the room. I also do a lot of like film scoring and commercial stuff. So I had a film come out last weekend on Netflix that was like a YA film. It's like a bunch of Riverdale stars. It was like bought by Netflix. Nice. And there's a soundtrack that came out with that had a bunch of my score on it. So that's kind of an ongoing procedure where I'm constantly submitting reels and submitting for commercials that I really like doing because it's really short form creative stuff.
You're really great at that, by the way.
Thank you.
Is that all instrumental stuff on that one?
It's almost all instrumental. I put a little bit of vocal, but it's pretty much all instrumental. It's all like underscore. It's like traditional compositional film stuff. Those are kind of the two main things that at least generate revenue. But then there's this whole other part of my life that I'm getting into right now, which is sort of the space that you're in. It started with a PBS show that I had in Vermont PBS called Making Friends with Ryan Miller, where I ran around meeting high functioning weirdos. So it was 13 episodes of that. That segued into another series called Bardo. That's another Vermont PBS show where it was a half hour format. It was basically bands would play in Vermont, do a 5-camera shoot, audio truck, super high fidelity capture, and then paired it with a 3 to 4 hour offsite interview that was then interspliced with the thing. So it's basically like Austin City Limits meets Comedians in Cars.
Wow.
So we shot 8 episodes of that. They're very expensive to make, which is why we've made 8. But we did like Lake Street Dive. We did Milk Carton Kids. Meryl did it from Toon Yards. Did this EDM artist, Sen Holo. Did Caroline Rose. Really, really fun.
That's a
to
big
do.
Scope.
Yeah, it's because they're just bands that were playing in town. And so that's kind of an ongoing thing, but part of this whole deal was that when I got into this like hosting gig, when I started to talk to people, especially on camera, it was like I felt this other part of my life click into place in the same way that like the first time I ever sat down to score music to picture, I was like, oh shit, this is something I want to do and I think I could be good at it. And this hosting thing was another one where it was like, oh, a lot of my life has been leading up to this, to be conversational and to be entertaining. It was really fun. So, you know, I had a meeting yesterday about starting a podcast and trying to figure out what that would look like. I also just had a meeting this morning about another hosting thing that I'm trying to figure out. So that's a very big creative arc, and I've been pushing really hard and trying to find the right match. I've been working on this stuff for a couple of years, and like all these little things are coming up, but it's been really encouraging. So that's a really big push for me right now. I had an animated series I put together that the Duplass brothers produced.
Wow.
That's really cool. It's like, it's really funny. And that's kind of like reached its end, although now I have this in my quiver of like, oh, I love doing animation. And it was like these 2 to 3 minute long stories that were animated. They're really funny. And then this is like my big, so we'll finish this and we can drill into whatever ones you want. But, and then this is really funny is, you know, I moved to Vermont 9 years ago, and I know you and I have talked a lot about this. I freaked out a lot because I love to make things. As you can tell, my pool of collaborators felt very different in Vermont. Like, we have similar lives. Like, you live in a town, and it's a cool town, and there's, like, probably a lot of interesting people, but it doesn't exist like New York or LA, where there's a million people. I'm like, what are you working on? We should do something. And then you're doing it, and people are making stuff. So, something happened in the last couple of years where I really started to click in with Vermont. It just took a really long time, I think. And I found this space. It's called Generator. It's like a maker space where there's a wood shop, a metal shop, a 3D printer, and they do classes. And I really just liked all the weirdo people making stuff in there. So I became
there's a chair you made there.
No, there's a table.
A table. That's
so like this was a weird thing that happened. It's like I made this. I was gonna make picture frames because I was like I want to learn how to use. And I made this table, and everyone that saw it was kind of like, "Whoa, like that's pretty good." So I kind of okay. So this is might be the thing I want to talk about, which is weird because I saw Bjork 2 nights ago at the Shed, and I'm a huge Bjork fan. I mean, I'm a big Bjork fan. I'm not like a... I mean, I didn't really even listen to the last record that much.
Sure. You're not encyclopedic.
I'm not... But I'm such a fan of her, and like, especially with my kids, it's just like, this is who we... This is our Bowie in a way. Like, yeah, she's yeah, just... Yeah. And it blew me away so heavy. And in the middle of my artistic haze, I was like, I really think I want to make more tables. Kind of. Like, in my stoned haze of just, like, being completely overwhelmed by everything that I was seeing and hearing and feeling, I was like, I think I need to do this table thing a little bit more. Like, because I was using embroidery, and I've been doing embroidering stuff for, like, the last year or something, and it feels really interesting. And I don't know to what capacity I'm going to do it, but I almost was like, well, what if I just, like, said I'm open for commissions? I don't know. I want to do a few more.
Yeah.
And but it's really fun, and they're really interesting, and it's funny, like, just to even set that intention of, like, what if I do that? Then I'm like, oh, what materials do I like? And I'm like, oh, I love Shugi Ben when they burn the Japanese wood.
Oh,
and
that's great.
And I love marble, and I love embroidery thread, and... You know, like, this is the kind of stuff. So it's almost like, I almost in this weird way, I feel like I'm like 17 or something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, oh, maybe I'll learn how to do this thing, because I'm not really a craftsman in a sense of, like, I'm not good with details. But it feels very holistic in this weird way to make something. So I, like, I had this idea, like, less than 48 hours ago, that I was going to set this intention to be more intentional about my time in there and make it... Less of like, oh, I'm just making something. And I will still be making something, but to be like more thought... I don't know if that's the right word, more thoughtful. Anyway, I've been talking a lot.
I like it.
I'm gonna stop.
It's funny. This came up from my first interview I did as part of this series of conversations was with Roseanne Cash.
Yeah.
And she immediately started talking about writing a musical, like a Broadway musical that she's working on with her husband, John Leventhal. And ever since then, in almost every one of these interviews, one of the main themes has been this sort of idea of diversification, where, like, when you make things, you wind up making lots of different things. Like, and it works different parts of you. And then there's the question of, and I wonder if you can speak to this, the hours you've put into music, which at this point is hundreds of thousands, how much does that translate? Like, when you're making a table, this is a whole new muscle you're exercising, but you've spent so much of your life creating things. I just wonder, like, philosophically, do you feel like it's completely starting from scratch, or are you coming at it feeling like, oh, I want to make someone happy, make this thing, send it out into the world? Does it seem like it's part of the same continuum?
It feels like the Venn diagram almost completely overlaps. It's yeah. So weird. I don't feel like there's any... It's not disparate at all about all of this creative stuff. And, like, especially because, like, in my TV show, it's like high-functioning weirdos. So, like, when I would try and distill the difference between the architect I met with the entrepreneur I met with the guy who just lives completely a mile off the grid and built a house with a shovel and a... And, you know, a geodesic dome with a shovel and a hammer was like, well, there's really, like, you burn all these guys down, and there's, like, the creativity is the real through line between all of it. And so, yeah, I mean, making a table is exactly like making a song, is exactly like cooking, you know. It's like you hear the chef music thing all the time, but it's totally true. Like, in fact, the people I was just meeting with, I don't know if I'm even allowed to, well, I don't know. It's like, I was just talking with these people, you're called United States Artists, and they have this huge foundation, extremely well-funded nonprofit, where they give 50 artists $50,000 a year, like, just to be an artist every year. And my friend is on the board, and I met this lady this morning, and she was talking about this really, God, what did she do? She was like, I think she was a playwright, and she went to visit her, and she asked this question. She's like, well, what are you working on right now? And she's like, I'm really into my garden, and I've been working in my garden. I just crossed these, and I made a new peony. And it was like, it's so funny. I literally had this conversation like 3 hours ago about this playwright. She was so blown away that there was this woman who was like so articulate and a performer, and then went into her garden and made a peony. But I was like, oh, I totally get that, and I feel so empowered. And I think part of why this happened in the Bjork thing was because the Bjork, it wasn't just musical, And it wasn't just overtly visual in so many ways, like the set design, the costume design, the actual graphics that were happening. Like, it was nothing that she didn't think of. I felt, I put an Instagram post up and I was like, how do I distill this? It was like a trust fall, because there was like, you couldn't look or feel anything that she didn't think of. It was so, and I think that that's kind of like how the table thing fits into my whole world of like, well, yeah, I'm a visual guy. Like, I'm starting, you know, I've been scoring movies for a long time, and I've been playing with, like, you know, I've been playing with embroidery thread and clothes and stuff, and, like, it all feels completely conversant with everything else. And I think probably with most artists, like, it doesn't seem like a controversial thing to articulate.
No, but I feel like it's not obvious, and I think it's so cool to hear how we all wind up kind of going at it like this. When you... we're a kid. I know you've been doing this for freaking ever.
As long as you.
Yeah. And so was there a moment when you were starting when you knew, like, undeniably this is going to be your life path, you're going to make things for a living? Was there an epiphany moment?
Well, no. But I feel like, full disclosure, like, we should talk for like 2 seconds about our relationship and how, like, I was such a huge fan of you and Mythologies because we both, your first record, because we both grew up in Dallas, and yeah, that you were... I mean, we're pretty much the same age. You're like a year older than me?
48, yeah.
Yeah, 46. So you were 2 years ahead of me. And my high school band, like adored. And I loved your record and the whole thing. And you were like a local boy done good.
When you first told me that freaked me out. Because I've always been embarrassed of that record. I was in high school.
Of course you were. Same. Of course you were.
And so I stole the British accent. I'm overexcited.
I never really got that. I have, but now I understand why. It's like, where'd you get the British accent from? Written on his album. Oh, jeez. So, no. I mean, I think I came to college being... Maybe I was like, yeah, I want to be a rock star. Like, I think that might have been... But I never was self-assured that I was like, that's... I never studied music. I'm not good at music. Like, I'm not a shredder. I was... You know what I mean? I was never... when I went to college, I never sang before.
So funny to hear you say that, because when I watch you, I've seen you do scoring for films, and yeah, I've heard stuff you're working on that's just musical.
Yeah.
I mean, in addition to this, the really obvious stuff with Guster... But, like, I think of you as one of the most musical people I know, and, like, super talented. So to hear you say that you're...
Yeah, well, thank you. And I don't... But I think it's just, like, I can't sit in with bands. Like, yeah, I'm not a shredder. And I think that my skill is in, like, melody and maybe now an arrangement. And now there's some kind of emotional component that's being drawn out by all the scoring that I've done. So I wouldn't say, like, I suck at music. Like, I'm actually really confident in, like, my ability to, like, especially when I get, like, I do commercials because it's just, like, really quick hits of creativity. Yeah. Like, okay, you have 30 seconds. They want it to sound like summer, but they want it a little bit modern. And so I love those assignments because just like, and you get paid a couple $100 and then you get a chance to win and it's really fun. But and some of those I'm like, this is good. Like, yeah. I feel good, and I hardly ever win because I don't think I'm like, I haven't reverse engineered it where I know exactly, but I just do it well enough that it's fun for me and the people don't feel bad for paying. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a little bit outside. But anyway, to go back and answer your question, no, I never thought like, and this band that started in college was also, I feel the same way about our first record as you probably do around yours. I didn't love it, but there was something about it that we did that caught on with people that was like, oh, maybe we... But by the time we graduated, we just didn't have to have jobs. It was enough of like, we had made a record with a good producer in town. We had sold 10,000 copies of our record. We had enough money to buy a van. We were making, like, the day we graduated, we took our van and we went to Chicago, made a video with a student at Northwestern. We played like the Northwestern, like, college day. And we were like, we had enough money to pay for an apartment. So I think it was sort of like, well, maybe we'll just kind of give this a go. You know, but I didn't, none of us studied music. None of us thought this was going to be a thing. Definitely not at 46.
It's funny. Hearing you talk is reminding me of something that since we first became real life friends years ago, you make ambition fun. Like, to me, I've always felt like ambition was a dirty word.
Oh,
like, it was
wow,
something to be kind of ashamed of, or it was like it was the dark side of what we do. Huh. But like, you approach it in such a way like, well, we need to want to do things and work hard and and keep pushing.
Well, I think that a lot of it is that it's really driven by creativity. It's like when I saw you do your book, and I was like, your kid's book. I was like, that's so perfect, and it makes so much sense. And it's like, it's super on brand for you. And that on brand thing can like that could be a very ambitious like capitalist statement, but I don't, it also just, it's just a comprehensive way of being like, you're a creative guy and you have these stories to tell and you're amazing at words, so of course, and you have a lot of friends like I do, so you're like really extroverted. So the podcast idea, when I saw that, it was like, oh, like I was a little bit, I gotta be honest, I was like 10% like, oh, Rhett's doing this two or first or whatever, because yeah. I have this in me, and I was like, oh, you would be who I would have on my show. Like, but not in a bad, but in a way of like, it just feels like, but that, and I guess you, people will see it and they like call you a try hard or like fly, like the, like there's ambition in there or something, but like you're just trying to make stuff, and everybody that I know and I love and that's in my life, like we all just want to make things and we want to support each other in the making of things. So like this is the universe that I want to exist in, is like where this is really celebrated, and like, you know, fuck whoever is outside of that world is going to call bullshit on the fact that you want to make stuff, especially because what I'm making never is like a no-brainer down the middle thing. Like it's all just stuff that makes me laugh or makes me enjoyable. Yeah, I
like
don't
even
know.
Even when you're trying to land a 30-second commercial, you're still handing them something weird.
Yeah, it's like I'm never gonna the guy that's down the middle. I'm the guy that if they want to go to the margins and this particular margin, I'll be there for them, but I never and so and same thing with like trying to write a hit song or whatever. It was like, look what our single was. It was me singing in a British accent. Like,
who knew?
But that's the most successful single we've had in like 15 years, you know. So it's like that's the thing that ultimately people respond to, and that's why like Bjork and Prince and Bowie, who are like the weirdest dudes on the planet, are three of the most remarkable artists we've had, because they just have a crazy universe of that they built on their own. And why this Bjork thing just affected me so deeply, because it was so comprehensive, this thing that she made, and it's so astounding on a level of creativity. I don't know.
This is something that comes up a lot as well in these talks, is the idea of calculation as being sort of anathema to creativity. And I'm hearing you talk about all these people and the universes that they've kind of stumbled upon or built. I don't think you or Bowie or Bjork, I don't think anybody sat down and said, ooh, I bet if I do it weird in this way, that's what's going to make money. Like with Overexcited, ooh, I bet if I do, you know, I'm going to run the numbers and then this is going to be the single that's going to, right? Like it's...
I mean, listen, okay.
You want people to like it.
Here's the thing. Here's the real thing is like we're in our 40s. Yeah. We've seen a lot of life. And like, what is the thing? And I love, and I spent a lot of time on Reddit, and like, so not all the really toxic parts of Reddit, although I do see that from time to time, but they're like, one of the cooler things is like, sometimes like old people have Reddit, like we're young people. If you could tell your younger self anything, I feel like this question comes up like every few months, there's a big like ask Reddit thing. And like, everything that they say and everything that's true is that old people are like, what do I wish I knew? It's like, I wish I gave way less of a shit of what people thought about me.
Yes.
And so this is the thing about all of life, in a way, is just, and it's so stupid, but it's like, be yourself.
Yeah.
And it is. And this is just a general way of teasing this out, right? Of just like, man, I like weird pants and I like this sweater and it doesn't match. And maybe on somebody else, it would look ridiculous. Or my friend Paul is like probably my best friend. It was like, I could never pull that off. And it's like, I see what you mean, because the intention behind it is sort of different, but I am just so much more empowered to be who I want to be as a songwriter, as a dude walking down the street, as a furniture maker, as a film composer, and just own all of it. Because it, if you own it, then it doesn't, nothing matters.
Yeah.
None of it matters. And that's really the whole trick of the whole thing. And like our kids, you know what I mean? Like all we're trying to give to them is just like, just you be you, believe in yourself. Like let's try and build you up, as give you as much ammo as you can when you go out in the world, that you just try and figure it out. It's all you could ever hope for anybody, right? Honestly.
So I hear you talk about your younger self and worrying about what other people think, and that's something that I really want to dig into in these conversations, is the obstacles in our creative life are obvious from the outside world, but the interior obstacles, the things that we build up in ourselves, the voices in our head that, you know, hold us down. It's not super obvious to look at you and think that you suffer from a lot of self-doubt or that kind of negative self-imagery or whatever, but what do you feel like, how does that affect you and how do you deal with it?
How does what affect me? The self-doubt?
This internally generated obstacles.
I mean, or
do you
know.
Even do that?
I think it's like, I feel like I'm in another phase now. I feel like right now you've caught me, and I don't know if this will last, but I'm feeling really fearless and I'm feeling really confident about the things I'm confident about.
Well, then how do you feel like, because it took a while to get there,
it
right?
It took me so long to get there. I had to own my band in a way, like taking ownership. And like, I know if people listen to the record, like, oh, I don't think this is perfect music or whatever. Yeah. And like, I listen to it, I'm like, oh, that's not the best, or we could have done that better. I know, like, I also go see Bjork and Radiohead, and I'm like, well, these guys aren't doing what I'm doing. Yeah. Like, they're talking to God. But I also like, okay, how about this? Last night, so I went and saw Bjork on Sunday, and last night my friend took me to see The Who. Oh, and like, wow. I don't really like The Who. I'm not that mad at The Who, but like, I was just like, I wasn't like cool. It was so weird seeing The Who after seeing Bjork, because it's just like, oh, look at these cans, and there's a curtain that comes down, and like the production, it literally felt like going to an elementary school thing after seeing the Bjork thing at the Shed. Literally. I mean, it just wasn't the focus. And so, and also the songs, like, they don't hold up in the same way. It's like, oh, this is a formula. This is what a Who song is, in a way that the Bjork thing, like, one point the guy was playing percussion with buckets of water as percussion, and you just like in a bucket, like it was a big tub of water, and they were mic'd, and it was the most, and I'm like, they're not doing, I'm hearing the same guitar tone every song. I'm hearing four chord structure. This is where the song comes in. And I felt myself being a little bit cynical about it. But then I look around and everyone's feeling it so heavy, and they're all dudes, and they're all in their like 50s, 60s. And I'm like, well, this is really beautiful. Yeah. You know, like, that's where I'm kind of coming at it. It's like, well, this might not be for me right now. I don't know if it'd be for anybody right now, but it's about what it made these people feel like and how valid that is as an experience.
Yeah.
So that was a very long way to get around about why I can feel good about my band, even though I know that I'm not making like you and I will listen to probably 50 records this year. You're like, holy shit, that record's so good. Like, how do they do that? And I think what's cool about my band and how I can stay confident is that I'm like, well, just look at it as a trajectory. Mm-hmm. Like, look where we started and look where we are. Like, are you really going to bust us? Like, when critics get mad about our band or whatever, I'm like, yeah, but look at what we've been doing. Like, you're not going to applaud the fact that we've been working our asses off to, like, look at our last record compared to our first. Like, who does that, really? I mean, there are some, for sure. And I think Radiohead and Bowie or Bjork are probably good examples of that. But so it's like Wilco or R.E.M. And not, you don't always like where they end up, and it's not always a good thing. But
you're talking about their evolution. The idea of evolution.
And so to come back to your question about the self-doubt, it's like, I don't think all my stuff's amazing. But I'm really confident in like that all of this is coming from a really pure place. I think that's kind of how I can defend it. Of just like, that's, and then again, this is just taking ownership of this. Like, my aim is true. You know, like, I really just want to make stuff. I generally like people. I'm generally creative. I'm really curious. I'm really open. And so then I can feel like I can take all this stuff on in a really kind of pure way, hopefully. And generally, I think it can come across that way.
I think it comes through.
I
for
think
sure.
that you can't, like, there's one word that always comes up in everything I do, and it's like verisimilitude. It's just like, it's just truth telling. It's like, I never want to condescend, and I just want to be on. I want to be. This is just like, I want to wear it, and that could be like, I think Bjork is being true when she builds an entire stage that looks like a mushroom, and everything is like, welcome to a land where you're half robot, half, you know, nature and half human. It's like, that might not be my truth, but it's hers. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm a little bit off topic, maybe.
No, I love that. It's perfect. So you got to this place, before I was even going to take you there, but I'm hoping now you can sort of distill it for me. If you were to meet a young version of yourself, 20, 21-year-old version of Ryan Miller, but working in today's world, What advice would you give yourself?
Oh, if I was, if it was me, you, if it was actually me,
you now,
when I was 21 or 21 years ago, like in my, in my 20s.
Yeah, you at 21, but as in 2019.
I think I came to appreciate weirdness really late, relatively late. Like, I grew up in Dallas, so the only, and I didn't have an older brother or sister, so the only weird music, like, I was listening to You and Jaco Pierce, but also, like, The Edge. Like, I was listening to Cure and Depeche Mode and The Smiths, but I had never heard The Velvet Underground. Like, there was no college radio where we were. Like, I didn't know what Astral Weeks was. I didn't know what Village Green Preservation Society was. I didn't know, like, The Misfits. Like, I just, like, I had such a I just had such a thin thing. I felt like I had so much catching up to do. So, like, now to be, to see my kids who are just, like, it's all there for you. You can go as deep into this stuff as you want, like that Meow Wolf exists, or you know what I mean, or this, or that you can go on the internet and find like Japanese like 80s fashion, whatever. I mean, listen, it's all there. And so part of it is like I want to play catch up from just not being exposed to all this. And also I think like even there was like, I think in college there was like, there was this thing, the Arts House, and they were like kind of where the weirdos went. Like, I'm so a weirdo now, and I wasn't. Like, a lot of weirdos, like, they start off as weirdos, and they live their life in this kind of weirdo way. And I think I was not a weirdo, and I'm becoming more and more of a weirdo every day. So I think what my advice would be like, and I wasn't resistant to it. I just, it took me a while to find it. But now, like, I just want to be in the most, like, when I was in Berlin shooting the Overexcited video, I was like, I just want to get out. What's the craziest thing, like, you can show me in Berlin? Like, where can I go? Is it a crazy sex club, or is it a weird art thing? Or, like, or the other night, like, I stayed up till 7 in the morning here, and I ended up on a boat on a, you know, in Greenpoint with, like, a bunch of people probably eating drugs but dancing, and there was an energy healer, and I'm like, these are my people. You know what I mean? But I don't think that they were traditional. They weren't my people when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I think I had maybe an inclination to it, to that world, but not really. And now I would just be like, I just want to go full bore into all things eccentric and beautiful and ugly and out, where that probably was not my inclination.
I love that.
Why, do you have an answer to that question?
No, I mean, sure, of course you do. Don't be afraid of the weirdos. That's good.
Afraid of the weird. No, the weirdos are your friend. Like, the non-pejorative weirdo is like, it's just, that is my ethos for all this. It's all like, I think that's even what I liked about you, you know, when I met you, is I was like, oh, you're like, everybody in my life is kind of a weirdo. And that's, in the best way, that's really everything I want. But that's the Venn diagram, the high functioning weirdo. That's like, that's my dream. It's just really eccentric people. It's easy to be eccentric, and it's easy to make shit, but to be eccentric and also make shit, that the ambition with the weirdo combo is,
and high function.
The high functioning is exactly. That's the thing. That's the real trick.
I love it. Well, this has been really fun, and I feel like it's been really useful. I feel like I could talk to you.
Yeah,
all
we could
day.
Probably do like 30 of these.
Yeah. But you know what we'll do is we'll save it for whatever the next thing you've got going.
Exactly. We could part two it.
You'll have to invite me.
You're doing good. That was good. You had no notes, and you just like had a whole thing. I kind of didn't want to listen to one on purpose. You had told me earlier, like, we'll do one. So I was like, cool, I just want to go in fresh.
Fresh.
But now I'm interested to hear about your other ones.
Listen, oh, they're all really brilliant, believe me. Thank you so much, Ryan Miller, for being my guest.
Thank you for having me, Rhett Miller. We are Miller. We need a theme song. I'll send you a theme song to play right now. Cue the theme song I'm going to write when I get home.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.